everyone, and welcome to a special episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. It's our second pre-season preview. This time we're looking at the Challenger Pro League. Once again, I'm joined by Scott and Joris. How are you guys doing this evening?
Hey guys, hello everybody. Really looking forward to diving into this. Spoiling you all this week, we are.
Two recordings in 2 days. We're going for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't say you aren't given what you want. If this is what you want, I'm sure it is. The Challenger Pro League. Obviously, last season, Molenbeek were the side that got promoted, and it was Vitton who got relegated. However, the format has changed this season. So it's 16-team league, with the top two getting automatic promotion. No kind of splitting or anything there. You finish in the top two, you're getting promoted. Teams 3 to 6 will play a promotion playoff. And this will kind of work quite like the English Football League method initially. So third place is 6, fourth place 5. Winner of those ties then face each other in the final. However, the side that wins that final will then have to play the side that finishes third bottom in the Pro League. So it's kind of a mixture of the English and the French sort of playoff systems, or maybe even the German system, if you could call it that as well. One kind of thing to note is that none of the under 23 sides can be included kind of in the promotion playoffs. So you could have a situation maybe where one of the under 23 sides finishes in one of the kind of in one of those positions, they then just aren't included and it will kind of roll down there. The two sides that finish bottom are also automatically promoted. There's no playoffs there. There's also no points halving or anything like that going on. So it's kind of a simple format to follow, we think. So for this preview, we're mainly going to focus on the non-kind of youth teams. So just kind of run over those teams that we do have in the league. We've got Club Next, obviously linked to Club Bruges. Standard de Liège 16, obviously linked to Standard Liège. RSCA Futures, which is the Anderlecht side. And then we have Jong Genk as well. However, we are going to start with Lommel. And for this episode, Scott's going to give you all some nice little context, what's going on at each club. And then we're going to kind of dive into a couple of players to watch for each team and maybe a little bit of a prediction as to where we think they will finish. Slight caveat with this league as well, kind of like with our kind of Pro League one, there's obviously a lot of transfer business still to be done for some of these sides. So the teams we're looking at now could look quite different by the end of the transfer window. But Scott, over to you. Give us a kind of overview of Lommel and how they're looking going into this season.
Well, quite a lot's changed at Lommel this summer, guys, as we know. They've been active in quite an interesting way. Obviously, they have a lot of resources at their disposal because most regular Belgian football followers will know that Lommel are part of the City Football Group. So there's a whole network there that, you know, they take real positive advantage of. Last season, obviously, their season was, I suppose, on the whole, disappointing. They didn't make playoff one in the end and ended up winning playoff two, having quite a strong second half of the season. And that's obviously had an influence, I think, to a certain extent on what's happened there so far this summer in preparation for the season. It's just about to start in a few days. Steve Bold is still T1 there. He's going into his second season. And the club are very happy, I think, with the work of Steve Bold. He's obviously got a season under his belt now. He's got accustomed to the Belgian football scene. And I think the expectations probably on him are a little bit greater. They have more spending power, Lommel, actually. It's worth kind of pointing that out as well. And they have spent more, I think, than anybody else as well, because they have that at their disposal. And interestingly, of course, one of the players who's come in, who I'm sure we'll talk about in a second, Dries Wouters, they actually paid a fee for him. Mechelen were keen to hold on to him, but not able to do that because Lommel effectively priced them out, which gives you an indication of the leverage that Lommel have these days. But yeah, they've completely sort of revised their plans, I think, for this season. And Mike Green, who's the chief executive there, saying a few weeks ago now in an interview that, you know, the perspective has completely shifted this season. They've put some additional resources in. They're really going to go for it this year. I think promotion is absolutely the target for them. Whether they can achieve that automatically with one of the two top places, or whether it comes through that third place playoff, we'll need to wait and see. But their signings certainly indicate that they're strengthening in key areas. You know, Wouters has come in, who I just mentioned. Igor Vitekeli as well, I think, is another really good kind of pickup for them. He should score quite a few at this level. So, they're tooling up for a much more positive season and a really good push at promotion.
Yeah, I'm quite bullish on Lommel this season. I'm quite looking forward to watching them play. I mean, they're always an interesting side to watch in terms of like the young talent they have. You mentioned a couple of the players there. Yeah, obviously Scott, like Vitekeli and Wouters, but got a couple that stand out for me. One is Domain Karim. Togolese international. He's got 8 caps for Togo already, only 19 years old. He came over from Feyenoord's under-21s, who only signed him in January 2022 from Planet Foot in Togo. Central midfielder who's also, according to kind of Transfermarkt and all that sort of stuff, is more of a defensive player. But getting a young international teenager at this stage, obviously people that have listened to this podcast know I'm very interested in African football anyway. So to see a young Togolese international come over into the Challenger, I'm really, really interested to see how he kind of slots in. Because if the numbers are correct, they spent a reasonable amount on bringing him in alongside John Banguera, the central defender. Scott, one I did kind of want to ask you about, not sure, this is like one of those kind of rogue questions, but interesting kind of, I love seeing like you get some really interesting mix of nationalities these days. And we've got a Scottish and Lesotho eligible player in Tosinolo Letsosa, who actually came over from Celtic's B squad. So not expecting you to know everything about him, but what was there kind of much that the fans in Celtic knew about him coming through the youth levels? Is there any kind of insight you have on him? Yeah, he seems like a really interesting profile of player with that Scottish Lesotho kind of dual nationality. And he's obviously a Scottish youth international as well.
Yeah, I think he's a really exciting pickup, actually, for Lommel. I think there's a feeling, you know, from Celtic's perspective, I don't think there was a realistic chance that he was going to make a breakthrough in a way that he wanted. And I think that's just because at a club like Celtic, those pathways from the academy to the senior side are not as established or as clear-cut as they should be. And I think a player with his potential and skill, I think, obviously, and his age now, just needs to be playing regularly at a decent level. And I think when an opportunity like this comes along to do that, I think it wouldn't have been a good move for his career really to have turned it down. So you leave obviously a bigger club where you're not guaranteed regular football at anything like the level you would really like, and given a chance to come to Belgium and to play regularly and develop at a higher level was a bit of a no-brainer for him. So from Celtic's perspective, it's disappointing because actually they did want to hold on to him because I think they recognised his talent, but you know, not being able to guarantee or give him any assurances as to kind of a pathway there, I think made the decision very easy for him in the end. And I think this is partly come about, I think, because obviously Celtic have a connection with the City Football Group, because Celtic's head of recruitment effectively is Mark Lawwell these days, and Mark Lawwell is the son of Peter Lawwell, who used to be Celtic's chief executive. And Mark, long story short, used to work for a long time with the recruitment team at City Football Group as well. So I think, you know, this transfer that Lommel have benefited from has come through that wider network, and it's just a really good example actually of how, you know, the bigger your network, you know, the more talent comes onto your radar kind of by default. And, you know, they've made him an offer that he actually can't refuse. And if I was him and his family, then I would have told him to go to Belgium as well, even though his regular listeners will know that Celtic are my team.
He definitely loves the green and white colours still. That's for sure.
Some things never change.
What else can I still add? Well, you can say they have still a very young squad. Outside of the under-23 teams, they have one of the younger squads. There's quite a big gap between some other teams and them, which is not a very new feat, but you feel like that actually changed a bit more than it seems to have done. Of course, like one player, Christophe Van Hout, a 36-year-old goalkeeper who now retired, plays a role in that, of course, as well. He pulled the average age up a bit in the recent years, or at least last season. And also noteworthy is maybe that they actually did indeed spend quite some money, but their transfer balance is nonetheless positive as of now. Because Ugalde was still in their books. He was already on loan at Twente for maybe even already the last two seasons, definitely last season, or was it maybe one and a half. But they've taken him over for a fee of around 4 million now. Belgali already went to KV Mechelen as well, of course. And yet that's still without the transfer that they have Vinicius Souza at the moment officially still, that most likely will really turn their books green, even more green than they are now. Well, it looks like he will be joining Sheffield United, according to the news we got, I believe it was yesterday, and also, well, maybe just on a disclaimer like we did on the other episodes, everything is as of the 8th of August. He's still officially in at Lommel, but he's rumored to be leaving the club. And that's not a surprise in itself. But the fee would be around 12 million euro, according to these same rumors, which would be by far, I would believe, the most expensive transfer in the Challenger Pro League or its predecessors in the Belgian second division in history. That will definitely break that record. To be honest, I do not know what the exact record is at the moment, but I can't imagine it being even close to that.
Sven Kless obviously does quite a lot on Lommel. He came out and said, yeah, it's going to be the biggest. But I'm sure you're right, Joris. I can't imagine anything near to that in terms of the second highest.
I think it gives you a sense of kind of, you know, Lommel to some extent operate obviously in a higher level than some of the CPL sides because of the network, as we were talking about. And when we talk about transfer fees as well, I think Lommel have, you know, as Joris was getting at there, they've generated something like, I think the fourth most in terms of their income. I think only Club Brugge, Union and Anderlecht have made more on sales this summer, I think, than Lommel. So, you know, there's quite an effective business model starting to operate there, you know, which is partly because of the Citigroup connections, obviously. But it does show that there are some quite smart longer term decisions being made, I think, as well.
Definitely. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think I do find it quite a strange one in the sense that Souza's barely played for them. Do you know what I mean? It's quite like a strange one to be like, yeah, they got all this money for him. But it's like, well, he didn't really play for them. He played for these other teams and was helped by the City Group, I guess. So it's quite an interesting one. But obviously, for the club as a whole, like depending on where the money goes, it's great or could be great depending on what it is. But I think just even without, you take out Susan, you look at the side now, even if without the 12 million or whatever it's going to be, like they look in a good place. They should be fighting for those top spots. Let's move on to our next team. One of the sides that were relegated from the Pro League last season in Zolta Waregem. Scott, over to you again. What's the update on a side that, yeah, plenty of listeners will remember for their kind of pretty poor season last year?
Yeah, so Zolta Waregem, actually, when you look at where they're at, guys, I mean, I think they have on paper arguably the best squad. I should say that first of all. And the most important thing is they've kept, I think, the kind of core of last season's squad. They are real players who I think could do damage at this level. So if you consider the likes of the fact that Ruud Vormer is staying on, Jelle Vossen, Christian Bruels, Zeno Gano, these are all players that, you know, will be able to perform consistently or should be able to at a high level and score a lot of goals. You know, Gano and Vossen could do very well in this division. They've also held on to Frederik Dolander as well as their T1. Although he only had a handful of games in charge at the tail end of last season and stood very little chance of keeping them up anyway, despite that, I think you could see a positive impact from that short period of time when he was leading the side. I think the mindset changed slightly. They seem to be a bit more positive. And there's just a feeling that because he knows the club well, that I think this is quite a good appointment for them. So they've spent a bit, not as much as you would think, to keep some of these names on board. But keeping, you know, those key names around is going to be really important for them. And you know, I expect them to challenge for the title. I don't mind saying that now, because, you know, with those players there, they really should, if they can stay fit. Couple of other things in Zalta that are worth noting are obviously Zalta legend goalkeeper Sammy Bossett. He has left the club now. His contract was ending. He's gone to Harelbeek. Of course, he's made, over 450 appearances for Zalta. So it'll be strange to see Zalta playing without him between the sticks. And we don't know yet whether it'll be Louis Boston, although we suspect it'll be him, or young Ennio van der Hou, who will be their first choice for the coming season. But that's a big change to the team sheet we're going to see there at Zalta. Obviously, they lost Vadira as well to Joris's side, kind of Genk, and made some money on him, which is lessened the pressure on others leaving. But Zalta start from quite a strong place and have been quite honest, actually, since the end of last season and saying publicly every opportunity that, you know, they're going to push strongly to come back up at the first opportunity, and I think probably are my favourites at the moment to take the title and certainly come up via one of the two automatic spots. Another interesting player who has come in is Ruben Saiger, of course, who's come in on loan from Westerlo. He should do very well at this level as well. So they've got a strong squad and are actually in a very good place.
So Saiger is also one I wanted to highlight. Scott already mentioned him now, but yeah, whether he has the level for to be a good defender in the Jupiler Pro League, that's maybe a question that still has to be answered. But he's definitely proven player, a central defender for the level in just below in the Challenger Pro League. So we all know that we've been only talking about your defense over the last few seasons, I believe. So that's their defensive issues that should help a little with that. Whether one player on its own that will sort that's another question. But that's something we will see in this league as well, together with it being a decent level, of course, still at the Challenger Pro League, but still a level below the Jupiler Pro League. It may be everything else will be sorted a bit more and the defense will be less of an issue. And I'm surprised that they could hold on to so many players actually so far. We'll have to see, of course, if that still remains the same in 3 weeks' time, in a month's time. But yeah. So far, they really kept a lot of the players together and didn't really lose anyone significant outside of Fadira. That's you'll always lose at least one, I guess, in this situation. Regardless of that, the main worry maybe that they could have is, of course, that a lot of those players that they could keep still are, of course, nearing the end of their career, and at some point things can go fast, of course, it'll drop in level. But even then, I guess their influence in the dressing room might be enough to be important for the squad still. And we'll see, of course. At the moment, I would say, think most of them definitely will still be performing at a high enough level for the Challenger Pro League. But we'll see where it all will lead, of course. Yeah, decent, really, really good squads for this level and quite balanced. They might have reinforced the right areas as well, and they made some money so far as well out of it all. So definitely they will be going for it. Anything less than a promotion will be a disappointment for them, I suppose, as well. Also a lot of teams will be really going for it, of course, because there's slightly bigger chance to be promoted this season compared to previous seasons.
Yeah, very interested to see kind of how those players that were stayed there kick on with the kind of the new players they brought in, like Abdoulaye Traoré, Igor Savic as well. Couple of players I'm interested to see from them. One is Papa Diop. He was part of the Senegal youth team that won the under-20s AFCON, and he was really, really impressive then. And there were a couple of clubs kind of keeping an eye on him. Didn't make many appearances for the side at all last season. I generally don't think he made... Did he make any? Yeah, he made one Pro League appearance for half an hour. So it'd be good to see him kind of get some more game time now that they're down there. And I mean, they've got obviously quite a few options in that central midfield area. With obviously Ruud Vormer still there. It'd be good to see some of these young guys get in there. Another one is Kevor Palamets, the Estonian 20-year-old, who, again, he made a couple of appearances off the bench for them last season, joined from Pied Limassol, only 20 years old. But he was like on the bench every now and then, so they clearly see him as a player that they want to develop and stuff. And this would be a great season to start to blood some of these young players in. I think Diop's contract runs out at the end of this season, so again, like, it'll be kind of like, get him signed on if you think he's good enough, and kind of then maybe you can make some money out of him in the future if he comes off. But yeah, definitely an interesting side to watch. And I'm kind of, yeah, I agree with both of you. I'm surprised they were managed to keep the amount of players that they did. I've seen there's loads of rumours surrounding Miroshi, the Tanzanian 20-year-old. He basically played everywhere for Torto Varagem last season. So be interested to see if he's still around by the end of the transfer window, because I think he was a great utility player for them and one of the only kind of standout kind of players. But yeah, no, it's a nice mixture as well, isn't it, guys? The kind of youth and experience that they've gone with this season by keeping some of those kind of older heads. So yeah, definitely a side that should be in the top two come the end of the season. Let's go to the other side that got relegated in Oostende, Scott. And it's been a bit of a weird summer for Oostende, hasn't it? A lot of kind of change that should have happened, but nothing's really happened in terms of some of the off the field stuff. But yeah, never kind of simple on the coast.
Yeah, it feels like the drama of last season from an Oostende perspective feels like an age ago now, which they'll be pleased to hear. But just kind of back to the context again here, people remember that Oostende were up for sale for a while. The Pacific Media Group, the current owners, still the current owners, have essentially failed to sell the club. Despite some interest, and look, for the time being anyway, to want to kind of hold on to the club. There've been some changes in the background as well. Obviously, Dominic Talhammer's left. They've brought in a new T1 in Stein Vreven, former Lokeren and Beveren T1, who's known to many in the Belgian football scene, no stranger. He's been around as well. He's come in to replace Dominic Talhammer. And it's kind of a clearing of the decks of sort, certainly regarding the culture of the club inside, because they have had some debts and some players there as part of that squad who were on quite long contracts. It's been a difficult kind of transfer summer for them. Gauthier Ganai, of course, who was their sporting director, has left as well. He's gone to Molenbeek, so they have a new sporting director. And in truth, there's not been too much they could do in terms of reshaping the squad because of the length of some of the contracts of those players. So it was always going to be difficult for them. On a positive side, they have generated some decent income already. The departures of Magdar Gay to Molenbeek and Sakamoto to Coventry have earned them a little bit over €5 million, I think. So that will make quite a big dent, you would hope, in some of the club's debts, which may well have been a factor in, you know, not being able to get a sale over the line in the end. So that's quite a big positive for them. I think they're a club in a degree of transition, you would say. For them, this season is really, I suppose, probably about consolidating more than anything else. Having said that, I think there probably is an expectation for them, minimum, to be a playoff one side, and once you do that, then obviously you've got a chance to push potentially for that playoff promotion spot, the third spot at the outside. And I think that's possibly the best that Oostende could aim for this season, to kind of come up through that playoff spot. I don't see them coming up automatically myself, but if they can consolidate and secure a playoff one spot, which I think they probably will, then it'll have been quite a good season for them. And they've already started to address some of the financial issues, I was saying, you know, by generating some income there. So we don't quite know what sort of Oostende we're going to see, but I suspect we're going to see a different playing style under Vreven as well to what we saw under Talhammer, which will be interesting to see how they kind of cope. But yeah, it's a club that craves some stability, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just don't really know how I feel about their squad, because I'm just seeing a lot of the same names that we saw last season. Obviously, yeah, Cedric Van Dahl has come in from Ghent, but you still got a lot of the same players. It's a completely different goalkeeping core, at least, which I think that's an area they've been searching over the last couple of seasons for. So they've got a little bit, maybe some for fresh blood kind of in there. But yeah, you're kind of looking, if they're going to do anything this year, you're looking to the likes of kind of Andy Musayev, Mohamed Berthe, Dapo Mabude. You're looking at those kind of young players to kind of step up and start to kind of take ownership of their position in the squad and prove that they are good enough to play for the club. The midfield's an interesting one, because you're looking, you see Delpino still there. That's one player you think, without the injury kind of stuff over the last couple of seasons, he probably would have got his move. Kenny Washer Santos just completely fell off the face of the earth last year. Like, he just clearly wasn't rated as being up for the relegation battle. I'm kind of with you, Scott. And also, it's Thierry Ambrose as well. I think he's more than likely going to leave. There are plenty of sides that are interested in him in the Pro League and beyond. So I'm with you, Scott. I don't see them battling out for a top two spot. And I don't know, the defence looks very similar as well, doesn't it? Apart from obviously Cedric Van Dahl and Brent Leys who've come in. But the centre-back core is very much similar, and that was kind of an area of weakness for them last year. So you're kind of counting on some internal growth, which could happen. Like, these are clearly players that they think are talented, and we've seen flashes from them. But I don't know, I still feel like they do need, yeah, like a season of kind of consolidation. But whether you can kind of afford to have that, because you could then just end up getting stuck in this league for a long, long time. So yeah, I'm kind of cautious about them. I don't really know. I kind of want to see it to believe what kind of their aims are, because I don't really see it from just looking at the squad at the moment.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I do feel though that indeed the midfield is actually quite strong, especially for this level. So if they can keep that together, yeah, that's of course a really important area of the pitch as well, that maybe they will be able to dominate games and so on. And there's more for the other players. It's more of the unknown factor of how much of a difference is there in level for between the two leagues. Of course, some of these defenders indeed seem to not have been up for the level in the Jupiler Pro League. But again, maybe it is just about enough, or it's they are actually really good players for this level, especially with this new format change and so on. It's really difficult for the teams going up and going down specifically, to really judge their seasons from last season and compare what it will be for this season. And up front, yeah, Ivan Bro stays. Of course, which should be a really strong striker. I don't see it happening either. But if it would, at least now for the first game, it seems like he will still be there. If he's actually with the squad and training and so on, that's actually a question I do not know. But I'm presuming yes. So that they will have him at their disposal, if that's true. Yeah, and Atanga is also should be good enough for this level for sure. But it will all. There's a lot of question marks, but I could still see them being, well, up there. Maybe not. I don't see them as favorites on paper either. But I wouldn't be completely surprised if they are actually going to have a quietly good season, relatively on top of the league. And who knows, that's enough for the second spot already, or who knows if there's even more surprises. But yeah, and an interesting one that is only closely related to them at the moment and now is that Cameron McGeehan is still, he has left the club on a free and he still is without a club. I'm personally not a big fan of the player, but I could really see him doing something for a lot of clubs in the top of this division, and also even for sides in the first division as well. But he is still without a contract. Maybe his own injury issues over the last seasons have something to do with that as well.
Yeah, I presume it must be the injury stuff, because I'm actually quite a big fan of his in terms of what he brings in energy and pressing from midfield. So I thought he could do a job for, yes, yeah, definitely Challenger League or Pro League. But I think those injuries are such a massive concern that it probably puts quite a few teams off. Let's go to the side that were battling with Molenbeek all the way for promotion, but just missed out. And that is Beveren. Scott, obviously, giving the context here, they've lost their star striker. Lots of people have been asking us on Twitter, like, who are they signing? When are they going to sign strikers? When are they going to do this? So now's your, this is the moment lots of you have probably been waiting for. Scott, tell everyone about Beveren.
Well, Beveren, I've decided to hang on to Wim De Decker as T1. He's going into his second season there, which I think is a wise move. You know, I think stability at this level is very important. Obviously, they went extremely close to being promoted. And in fact, if the league was the way it's going to be this season, they would have been promoted. So Beveren, very, very unfortunate, as we know, at the tail end of last season, not to go up. Molenbeek obviously did in the end, but yeah, Wim De Decker's back for a second season, which I think is a smart appointment. As I was saying, stability is a word that's been coming out of the club a lot in the pre-season, and I can understand why. They've lost, you know, as Ben was saying, they have lost some really important key players offensively speaking. Obviously Tierno Barry has gone to Bâle. He's had a very interesting start there, but that's another story. They've also lost Ribeiro Costa as well, who offensively was a really important player for them. But they have been very, very active in the transfer market, actually. They've not sat on their hands at all. Didn't expect that they would. I think they knew that some of these players were leaving in the event that they didn't go up, which they didn't. So I think to a large extent they have been kind of quite prepared for this. Jordi Condom, who was sporting director, he has left as well. They have a new sporting director, former sporting director Vertone. You know, so they've been very active in replacing some of the losses. I know the fan base were kind of quite concerned because some of those players that they lost were really very good at this level, and there was a worry that they weren't being adequately replaced. And I think the answer to that is we don't really know whether the replacements that have come in are going to be like-for-like replacements and whether things are going to click for them. But generally, Beveren's recruitment, and I think this is an important point, has actually been very good, I would say, over the last 12, 18 months. So I don't have as many worries about that, perhaps, as some of the fan base do. A really interesting one who has come in, who Joris might know a little bit more about, who I think is a really good pickup, is JD Goosens. I think he's an exciting pickup for them. I can see why he wanted to move to be guaranteed that regular playing time at a slightly higher level. I think he eyes potentially the fact that Beveren should be title contenders and are certainly strong favourites for one of the two automatic spots. And of course, as we know, three sides potentially can go up depending on how things work. So as Joris was saying earlier, there is a bit more wiggle room, but he's one I quite like the look of, and I'm looking forward to certainly seeing more of. But their squad has, I think, enough quality and depth in it still, despite who they've lost this summer. You know, Evert Luis, he's recommitted. Sheldon Bateau is going to be around a little bit longer. You know, there are some, you know, important, you know, contract extensions that just kind of, you know, yeah, help maintain that stability of the club that I was getting at. But the club are they're in a good place financially at the moment as well, and I think they just have to put that desperate disappointment of the circumstances of the end of last season aside and try and pick up where they left off. But it's, to me, that's a strong and exciting squad, and I'm looking forward to watching them again.
Definitely did have a lot of turnover, so we'll have to actually see how that all pans out. Also, in comparison to all the other squads we've discussed so far, their squad is actually relatively thin, 22 players, which, well, for this level, to be honest, can be enough, of course. Regardless of that, they should still be a good squad. They were close to it last season. This season, we'll have to see if they can keep it up as well. But definitely, they will be, like many teams, eyeing promotion, an automatic promotion here. And not that much more to say about Gerses. Yeah, that he's one of the, well, him leaving is one of the reasons why I'm a bit worried for the Yongheng squad. To quickly touch on them, the the older players out of the under 23 squads have all left. So this could prove really an issue for them. I'm sure he's indeed eyeing that Beveren will be going up for this season, because, well, a level up in theory, of course, for this season, that is not the case. He will be facing his former teammates even. Of course, I understand completely the size and the position of the teams in the table most likely will differ quite significantly. They seem to have a quite balanced squad. Will it be enough for this season? We will see.
Just picking up on a couple of kind of, I guess, players of interest. Yeah, you mentioned obviously Goosens already. He's going to be definitely one to watch. Godwin Koyalipu, who recently just came out and announced that he's going to be eligible for the Central African Republic. He's a former French youth international. He signs on a free from Lausanne Sport. But he spent last season in the third division of French football, scored 13 goals in 18 appearances and 2 assists as well. So quite interested to see how he does coming over from France. I guess it's kind of the striker situation that everyone's looking at. Tierney Barry, like you said, Scott, sent off a few times already since joining Basel. Actually, as well, I was listening to the Bundesliga 2 podcast, and I think Matt on there was talking about, he's like, yeah, and Vukotic got sent off for Vern Wiesbaden. And I was like, I wonder if that's because I didn't realise he had left. And I looked and it's, yeah, Alexander Vukovic got himself sent off on his first start. So something about Beveren players leaving. Maybe Lucas Herrera Costa is going to get sent off for Sundowns on his debut as well. Mbakani's still a free agent. And I know lots of people are wondering if he's going to come back. I presume that they are interested in bringing him back. That's kind of what we know. But at the moment, we don't know anything more about how that's kind of going. So it's going to be interesting because I think they should be challenging. And we know for our good friend Antoine, that's what they want to be doing. That they've wanted to go back up every single season. That's always their ambition. It's just naturally, if you don't get promoted, you will lose some of your best players. That's just how it works at this level. Your players will get taken. So the recruitment kind of has to be quite fluid and quite active every single season. Just in case you don't go up, you need to have the players ready to come in. And they've made some moves, but there's probably some more moves that they will make.
Yeah, I think you know, there's still quite a lot of time, as you know, Ben was saying at the beginning of the episode. You know, that there are going to be changes to a lot of these squads yet, particularly in an addition sense. You mentioned Mbakani there. I remember kind of this time last year when Beveren were trying to bring Mbakani in, they were competing with some other clubs, Mullen being one of them, and Mbakani's agent is a little bit difficult to deal with, I might suggest, and I think his move to Beveren in the end came about very late. That decision was made very late on because of a number of other offers, I think, that were there at the time. So I think he's advising his player to wait as long as possible. So it may be the case that Mbakani possibly does come back for another year. And actually last season he was very, very good. I know a lot of people had their doubts as to whether a player of his age would be able to perform even at CPL level, but I think his contribution was really very strong. So there's nothing to suggest he doesn't have, you know, another season in him at that level. So I think he would definitely add something if he was to come back. So don't be surprised if he does perhaps come back, but it happens again, much like last year at the very last minute when, you know, they see that no other offers are going to come in. And that, to be fair to him and his agent, actually, that's their prerogative to kind of take their time about things. But I think they've probably got a very clear idea of what they're going to do there already.
No, I'd imagine so, that's for sure. Let's move on to a side that had, an interesting season last year in Denza.
Yeah, so Denza, I suppose, had a... they would probably describe it as a disappointing season last year. They would have hoped to have made playoff one, which they didn't in the end. You know, the second half of the season, a bit like Lommel's, was quite disappointing for them. Obviously, they have relatively new owners as well, from Singapore. So the infrastructure there is kind of constantly in flux. And, you know, we know from what they've said, they have grand plans for a new stadium longer term, and a whole development of the network there. And they've been working quietly away at that in the tail end of last season. You know, so they've been starting to do things like broadcasting a lot of their games on the club's own YouTube channel and things like that, that are kind of positive in terms of accessing the club. Their T1 is still Marc Grosjean. He came in obviously last October, so this will be his first full season at Denza. Again, he's no stranger to Belgian football culture. Former Verton, Union Saint-Gilois, Serang, Eupen, Antwerp, Namur, La Louvière coach. You know, not many clubs that Mark hasn't been around in some form. You look at his CV, quite an experienced coach. Focused very, very firmly on Belgian players. That, interestingly, was one of the reasons why he left Union Saint-Gilois, actually, because he wasn't particularly open to the nature of their recruitment process. He likes to focus on, you know, on kind of young Belgian talent, perhaps at the expense of other talent. So he's actually done quite well since he came in. He's made them more stable, I think, and they've certainly done well since he came in. So I think they're probably going into this season reasonably optimistic. They haven't spent a lot. They will be aiming for a playoff one spot again, as they probably should. Their recruitment has been relatively quiet, so it's difficult to know what we're going to get from them. But they have brought in a favourite of yours, Ben.
Yeah, you say their recruitment's been quiet, but I think it's been massive. Sulemanan, he's back and he's still in the league. People who listened to the thing last year, to our preview of the challenge, you all know that I'm a bit of a Sulemanan fan, based purely a football manager and nothing else. But to be fair, he got 9 goals for Verton in the 2021-2022 season. He got 9 goals again last season for Verton over the course of the kind of the normal league and then the playoff as well. 3 assists as well. So the guy can score goals at this level in pretty poor teams. Mauritanian international as well. And there's another man that they've brought in that maybe we had to give him a bit of provision as well in Guillaume de Schriever from Lies. 9 assists during the regular season last year. He got 10 assists overall, 6 goals as well. He looks like a really, really good pickup for them. I know there are a couple of other teams interested in him. And then you're kind of hoping that for them, those two alongside Lennart Mertens will be able to get the goals, because obviously Mertens had a great 21-22 season where he got 12 goals. Last season, not as good. I think he only got 8 goals. Obviously, he was also at Club Next for a little bit before going back to Denza. So had kind of an interesting little kind of half season there. But yeah, he got 3 goals and 9 for them. And I feel like you look at this squad and you do kind of look towards that kind of attack, those attacking players, to see kind of, yeah, maybe if they can come off, this side could be quite good. They have got some interesting young players at the back as well. Ucio Deportes back from loan. Would have been interested to see if he gets some game time. Obviously, I think he's former Zulte Waregem player as well. But then they've got the experience of Steve Derrida in the midfield. So interesting side. I think I agree with you, Scott, in the sense of they'll probably be aiming for playoff one, but I guess they'll be hoping that they actually get off to a much better start than the one they did last season.
Yeah, I only see like a mid-table finish for them, which is not necessarily bad. And that could still mean mid-table fighting for these final spots for the playoffs, of course, as well. Not that much more to say. They have actually a relatively experienced squad, despite of what Scott said about Grosjean really liking to work with a lot of young players. That on average, their squad is quite experienced, age-wise, at least. I personally am indeed not a fan of the word of experience, actually, in this context, but purely based on age, to do it for the sake of it. It's one of the elder squads in the league. But it's also it's a good squad, but I miss a bit of the wow factor. Yes, An and Mertens, that is potentially a really good striker duo, one of them really taking, one of them in the team, whoever playing there. There definitely isn't a good quality there. the rest is all right, but I don't see them anything else than a mid-table finish either. Maybe if they can get off to a good start, indeed end up a little bit higher and really fight in the playoffs in the end.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment of them. Let's go to a side that have now been, this will be their second season back in the Challenger Pro League, and that is Beerschot.
Yeah, well, Beerschot are an interesting club. Obviously, I think a lot of people probably thought they would have gone quite close to coming up last season, and because of changes inside, it didn't quite happen. Beerschot are another club that are looking for new owners. And the big issue that they have is that they're having to sell players effectively before they bring ones in, which has made their transfer business a little bit tricky. So again, it's I suppose it's about consolidation really more than anything else for them until they do find new owners. Having said that, they're not in a bad place. At the moment, they are investing in a new academy site as well. So the resources that they do have are going into the general infrastructure, which is a positive point. Their T1 is still Andreas Weiland, the Austrian. He's now going into his second season there, like Steve Bold at Lommel. So the club seems to be quite happy with him. You know, they didn't do too badly. They went too far off it last season, actually. So reasons to be optimistic for them. I think they probably ideally would have liked to have invested a little bit more in the park than they actually have been able to. But because of that contextual situation around the ownership, then that's made, you know, their recruitment a little bit tricky this year. I in terms of the expectations, I think, you know, they should make playoff one, and I think they are in a position probably to push reasonably hard for that third potential playoff spot. They'll certainly compete for that in amongst the other kind of playoff one sides, but I don't see them being strong enough at the moment to push for automatic promotion.
Yeah, I see one gap at the moment in their squad, which is at central midfield. They really could use some more there. Of course, they still have Sanusi, which is a good player, as we know. But outside of him, they don't have that much players and even a youngster. And all of them are at least marked as defensive midfielders as well. And Andy Koshy as well, then as a central midfielder. But nothing more than that for now. Outside of that, okay, maybe some of the wingers can play in a more central role as well, or maybe it's as important in their in the way they tactically play. But I see some gap there. Also, same comment as with Beveren, relatively thin squads. Likewise, I believe 22 players, or maybe even only 21. They are in an okay place, I would agree, but in midfield, I do feel central midfield, an attacking midfield, they might, they could, in my opinion, use some more players as well.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. You just look through the squad and that's definitely one of those areas that could do with a little bit of work. Interested to see, kind of what they're about this season. Interested to see if they've got quite a young kind of central defence as well. I think the oldest is Herve Matisse at 27 of the central defenders. They brought in Felix Nzango from Juventus's academy, the 20-year-old French Cameroonian. I'm really interested to see kind of what he brings. He looks like he's got some great hair as well. And people who listen to this podcast know we are fans of good hair, and he could definitely be one of them. but you also go through the squad, don't you guys? And you kind of think over the years, even during the time of the Pro League, they'd brought in quite a few kind of interesting young players that just aren't here anymore. They've really kind of not either developed or not kind of taken the next step, or they've moved on before Beerschot were able to really use them. So it is a kind of blend of that, but I think they look reasonably young this season. The average age is 23.5. So yeah, one of the younger sides outside, if obviously you take away the kind of the academy teams, because their average ages are 20 and below, but they are definitely a young side this season, and that's something they've been looking to kind of build in, is the academy and stuff like that. So it's kind of an interesting direction to see how it takes them this season. So yeah, I'm not expecting that much from them. I think probably getting into the playoffs would be great for them, but I don't think, just by the look of the squad, that they've got the quality to kind of win the playoffs and then beat one of the Pro League sides. I think that's kind of there's not that many sides within this league that look like they could do that. Obviously, it really does depend on who finishes in that position in the Pro League at the end of the season. But you're looking at this Beerschot sign, you're like, unless some of these players are really going to take the next step, I can't see them doing that. But if they make playoff one, I think that that's a pretty decent season. And these players have then got some more experience and can grow from there. So, yeah, one of the interesting sides. Let's move on to a side that's slightly older. Only five foreigners in this team, and that's Dender.
Yeah, well, Dender are still coached by Timmy Simons. Timmy came in towards the tail end of last season on a temporary basis. Another coach who's been around, obviously, a fair bit, needs no introduction from us. Was at Zalta for a long time. Things didn't work out for him there. Enter Frederick Dollander, who we were talking about earlier. So Timmy Simons has decided to stay on for a little bit longer at Dender. And really what he did when he came in at the tail end of last season was steady the ship for them, because they were in danger of potentially dropping out of the Challenger Pro League altogether until he came in and got a few points at the tail end of the season that kind of secured their slot. I think it's difficult to know what to expect of them. You know, their business has been kind of quite quiet. It's been something like 14 in and 9 out, something like that, in terms of the numbers. I think a playoff 2 spot probably is a decent season for them. Whereabouts they finish in that, obviously, time will tell. But I think it'll be quite a long season for them, and one in which they are, again, probably potential relegation candidates, dare I say it, because the squad, looking at it, although arguably a little bit better than last year, is not one where, you know, you can see them having a markedly different season. I think, you know, Timmy Simons having a full season, a full tilt at it, may make a difference, because much like other coaches who, Frederick Dollander, funnily enough, when he came into to Zalta, there was a difference in terms of their points haulage when the coach came in. So the players have responded to him, and that's a positive point. But I wouldn't expect too much from Dender myself this coming season.
Like Ben was already mentioning before as well, I think they're the oldest squad by age in this league, but they're also a bit of an... Despite that, they're a little bit of an, well, not completely unknown quantity, might be not the right saying, because, well, they are known relatively, but in the sense of where how this will all pan out, it is a bit of an... The selection is built up a bit strangely as well. I see 7 central defenders, but only 2 central strikers. Yeah. So I'm wondering what's up there. I'm sure some movement will be done, at least at the central defender front. And I presume there might be an extra striker joining as well. Although Lallemand definitely is a good striker, but for this level. Maybe 2 strikers is enough, but the balance seems to be a bit lost there. That's all I wanted to point out. A lot of like I like to say, average players for this league as well, I think. So should be, well, I would also expect them in the mid table again and not fighting for the playoff spots until the end of the season. With this current squad, I do not see that happening.
Yeah, I'd be quite surprised if they were able to get into that top 6. That'd be quite a feat from Timmy Simons. They do have Bruni and Simba, who joins from Beveren, who has a league winner's medal. Obviously, last year with Antwerp, he played, I think it was about 13 games across Cup and the league. So he got his winner's medal for that. And then he moved to Beveren, and now he's moved on to Dender. So he's probably one of the more exciting players, like looking through that squad in terms of the incomings. Couple of defenders coming in from Molenbeek, like Ibrahim Asoli Sankon, Fabio Ferraro at left back, Keles Masangu. He comes in from Vertonghen. Obviously, lots of Vertonghen players have managed to stay in the league, and he is one of them. But yeah, I agree with you guys in terms of light up front, but they've got a ridiculous amount of centre backs who are all around about the same age as well. So it's kind of like a weird. It's not that there's loads of young players waiting to learn off the older players. It's like, no, they're all between about 26 and 28, 29. So it's kind of like, this seems to be an overload of players in that position. To the point that if you're playing a football manager, it's just, you'd be pretty frustrated because they'd all be coming to you asking to play every single minute of every single time you're playing the game. So they kind of do need to consolidate and sort that out a little bit, in my opinion. But I think they'll probably avoid relegation just looking at the side as it is, but yeah, not expecting them to be challenging for the top spots at all. One side who relegated last season, were always going to get relegated last season, but we were all kind of talking about, we're not really sure what they were going to look like going into this season. So Scott, over to you to talk to us about Serang.
Yeah, well, that's the key question, isn't it, Ben? What are we going to get this coming season from Serang? And the answer to that is we don't really know. A lot of questions around Serang. What we do know is that we will have a Liège derby in the Challenger Pro League this season between Serang and RFC Liège. So that's something for us all to look forward to. In terms of what's been happening inside the club, they have a new T1. I say new, he's been at the club for a little while actually, Gregory Primont, who was Juan Sebastian Legros's T2. He's stepping up to become the new T1 this season. He was actually Jose Junchamp's T2 for the short time that Jose was there as well, kind of last season. Former T1 of Metz Academy, actually, Primo. So the parent club's influence coming to bear, as you would expect again there. And that's probably an appointment that kind of makes sense. They've been clearing the decks. There's been quite a lot of players leaving Serang this summer, as you would expect as well. Obviously, them being relegated has really kind of impacted their ability to hold on to some of the talent that was there. Because actually, there were a number of players at the club who, you know, really had real potential. But unfortunately, when you're in that environment where you're kind of in free fall, obviously you're not getting the best out of players. So a lot of the more promising and interesting players have left the club since then, and they've definitely lost some key players. Marius Muandomaji, for example, has gone to Samsunspor on a free transfer, and that's obviously a very good pickup for them. He's a player that we thought might yet end up with a Pro League club taking a punt on him, but he has gone to Samsunspor. How their season might pan out is very, very difficult to predict, I think, just because of the amount of change at the club. I think playoff two probably at the moment, I would say, is the most realistic and likely outcome for them. I think they've probably got enough to stay in the division, just about, but it's about whether they can get a degree of consistency going, because consistency is something that's been very, very difficult for this club to achieve over the last couple of years.
There's one of the weirder transfers that I've probably seen. Simon Elisor, who scored, I believe, one goal for Serang in 13 games, then went back on loan to French football with Stade Level. 8 goals he scored in 21 games in Ligue 2, so not bad return. He then gets bought by Metz, obviously Serang's very close friend, for €400,000, according to Transfermarkt. Like, obviously, Transfermarkt's fees you can never really know, but how on earth did that, like, that just feels like, you know, again, apologies, football manager reference, where like you add a manager and you buy your own player because you need some money to sign some other players. Do you know what I mean? It's like, The transfer makes no sense, because there's no way that he's going to be playing for Metz. Like, I just don't see it. I don't think he's at that level. From what we saw in Serang, he just didn't look like a Ligue 1 player. So that was a weird, weird one. And it leaves, they're very light in strikers. They've got like Ifoni, that guy that came over from, I think it was the Mozambique League. So maybe we'll see some more of him. But they got Stephen Vray, who's an interesting player. Matthew Kakback, who I quite like as a young player. But again, they've then got a bunch of centre-backs. Like, they have so many central defenders. So I don't know how they're going to sort out that kind of backlog. But yeah, I think they'll definitely miss Marius. They'll miss Antoine Bernier, obviously. Jared Colota's gone as well. Long-time player for them. So yeah, don't expect them to be getting promoted this season, but they could be an interesting watch with the young players that they've got.
Yeah, remember me highlighting Elisor in the bumper preview of last season as like one of the, that was a very random pick to be player of the season or the signing of the season last year. Well, I don't either. No, that didn't happen. But yeah. But yeah, indeed, Dinder had, remember I was talking about, Dinder is having 7 central defenders. So yeah, I thought, okay, let us have 8. So yeah, that's that. Also, both sides then on the do not have a lot of wingbacks or left or right backs, not necessarily even wingbacks, but yeah, maybe parts that might, of course, be a case that some of these central defenders are not completely classified correctly or can also play on the wings. On the sides, but nonetheless, a ridiculous amount there. Yeah, and the worrying thing maybe for Serra, as you might have noticed, is that we are running through this episode with the market values, the top market values first, and the teams with the most top market values first for the total squads, and running them down. And well, I guess it's worrying for them that they are, well, more towards the end of the pack and not somewhere in front, so that must say something already. And indeed, a lot of players left, so I think they will be happy to be a stable team in the mid table this season. I think everyone around the club will be happy with that, or at least I feel like they should be.
Yeah, they definitely should be if they can get into that. Yeah, like you said, you're kind of going through market value, and this side certainly punched above their weight last season. We definitely enjoyed our little trip to Lies. So, Scott, let's talk about the side with a rich European footballing history, but now stuck languishing, I guess you could say, in the second division of Belgian football.
Yeah, as Ben was saying there, we took in a Lierse game last season and had a great evening and a spectacular thunderstorm that night. Really enjoyed that visit. Full of drama. It was fantastic. Yeah, I mean, Lierse have... there's been quite a lot of change at Lierse this summer, actually. Tom van Imskoot, who was the relatively long-standing T1, decided not to renew his contract. Fancied a new challenge, has left the club over the summer, and they've decided to bring in, they're investing in youth, actually, Lierse. They've brought in Joe Christians, who is effectively, you know, coming up from a lower level. They brought him in from KSK Heist, and this is the highest level he's coached at. I think in order to help support him, they've obviously brought in a fairly experienced T2 in Geert Emmerichs, who most notably probably is a former Anderlecht T2 to Besnik Hase and Jon van den Brom, who both won the title, obviously, at Anderlecht, while Geert Emmerichs was there as well. So there is some experience kind of supporting Joe Christians. But I think the fact they've chosen to bring him in ahead of a number of other much higher profile candidates actually suggests that, you know, the club are willing to give young and upcoming managers a real chance, and I think that's a real positive. And some of the players who've come in this season, the squad has got younger over the summer. They've lost some big hitters, of course. But some of the players who've come in, I think, and I've just kind of picked out 4 here who I think are quite interesting and I think have enough experience about them to contribute quite a lot. Obviously, Erica Kanzi's come in, Glenn Klass, Obi Olar. Some of their incomings, I think, have been kind of quite shrewd. And as I was saying, you know, the club are kind of, pivoting things slightly, you know, emphasising youth, which they've kind of always done. But I think, you know, Tom van Imschoot leaving has allowed them to kind of reset things slightly. I think in terms of their expectations, I think a playoff 1 spot isn't out of the question, but I think it might be quite close for them. It'll depend on, you know, how much consistency they can kind of get going and whether Joe Christians works out for them, whether this squad kind of responds to them. But they're a club in quite an interesting place, I think, and certainly looking to enjoy a return visit at some point.
We'll have to see how this pans out. They had a bit of a weird transfer window, maybe. They brought in some experience, which is good, but they're also definitely still a very young squad, a lot of Belgians as well. Or teams seasoned players inside the Belgian first divisions, not necessarily only the first one itself. Ulari, yeah, that's always a bit of the gamble here with his injury history. If he can stay fit, he should be a top striker for this level. but unfortunately that are a lot of question marks about that. But let's hope for him and for everyone that he stays fit, of course, that he can stay free of some injury worries for some time, or even until the end of his career, of course. They brought in a few. Yeah, Okansi, I think, is really exciting. He didn't feature much at Kortrijk last season anymore, but he used to be a really quite a good talent at the level above. Especially at Eupen, at Kortrijk, he didn't really pan out perfectly throughout his whole spell, even though he had a good start as well there, I believe. But by the end of this of his time there, it petered out. Let's see if he can revitalize his career. Same can be said for Aristoten Kaka, who has been on the books with Anderlecht for so many years. Has been such of a bit of an agent transfer for Anderlecht there. Didn't really I'm not even sure he featured in an actual game for Anderlecht, but he was loaned out a lot. He came over amidst the mess with that turnover with Koeke when he came from Oostende, and Kaka also was at Oostende, and he was at Oostende and at Moeskroen before, and there he was, especially at least given his age, he was an okay player, nothing more than that, but remember that's also a level above still. But it's a big question mark after so many years of not playing much, how his level will be as well. So I feel like Miers have taken a few gambles here. They had to do a few things, of course, because quite some players have left the club. And I do not see them having a really horrible season or any relegation issues, but I've one of those other teams that I would say put a stamp on of average, so in the middle of the pack, bottom middle, lower middle, who knows, I think again the best they can hope for is probably the last spots in the promotion playoffs, but I actually doubt it at the moment.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned all the players I was probably going to mention. I think it's kind of that policy of you bring in some of these guys who have got a point to prove. All three of those guys, and Kaka, Okansi and Ulare, have something to prove. And I think that they kind of did that last year, didn't they, with Leonardo Rocha. Like, we saw him at Eupen, he didn't really look very good, but he went down to play for Lierse and he just completely looked a changed man. The cultural and kind of maybe the lack of pressure really did suit him down there. So maybe that's kind of what they're hoping for. Same with kind of like with Serge Tabakoy, they brought him in from Rusklon and he then moved on to China as well. So it's definitely a place you could probably go and rediscover your career in, like a nice community club that's definitely still in touch with the community around it, from what we saw when we went there. So yeah, if you're ever in the area, definitely do go check out a game.
You're dead right about that, Ben, actually, you know, about it being a good community club, which many in Belgium are, because actually Lierse, I think, have only got three non-Belgian players in the squad at the moment, something like that. So it's definitely what you would describe as a good Belgian club, which I think is a great thing. Bodes well for the club's future, to be honest.
Yeah, although they could probably do with a couple more centre-backs. Only kind of two at the moment on the books. So, yeah, bigger than a few more of them. Maybe they can ask a couple of the teams that have about €1 billion on their books if they can send a couple over. That could be quite useful. Let's go to one of the promoted sides. Little disclaimer before this recording, Scott asked Joris how you pronounce this one, and I'm hoping I'm going to do it justice because I've kind of forgotten what we said. Royal France Barons, something like that. Just not Franks Barons is kind of how it's written, but that is not how you say it. Scott, maybe you can do a better job than I did on this one. But yeah, let's talk about one of the first of the new boys that we're getting to see, which is always exciting. It's exciting to see some fresh faces because we've had quite a few of the same teams over the last couple of years in this division.
Yeah, well, this side are one of our newcomers. And it's actually, interestingly, it's the first time they've played at this level as well. So that makes it interesting and exciting. And you have to put a little bit of a French spin on the pronunciation to kind of get close to it. So Franck Baron, not Frank Baran, as some people like to call them, and we nearly did. But yeah, that's right. I was double checking Frank Baran with our Joris ahead of schedule because I wanted to try and get close to getting this right. So apologies if I've butchered that, but I will get better at it. Yeah, in terms of where the clubs are. Yeah, it's their first time at this level. Their T1 at the moment is still Arnaud Messier, former Beveren, Rosselaar and Sarang T1. He managed to get them promoted, so he's in quite a good place as far as the club's concerned. Modest transfer business, something like 13 in, 7 out, although there are some quite interesting names in there that will be familiar to regular listeners. In that squad at the moment, they've brought in the likes of Kevin van den Driesch, from Kortrijk. I think everybody will know Kevin. And a famous old name, because he's certainly been around for what feels like forever, capable of scoring an absolute cracker, Terry Chevalier, is still at the club. So it'll be interesting to see him again on a more regular basis. And another player I'd kind of picked out, who I think has some quality and ability, former Mouscron, Mechelen and Charleroi midfielder, Clément Taimon. Yeah, so it's always exciting to welcome a newcomer to the league. So I'm looking forward to watching them and seeing what they've got, because there's a little bit of quality and certainly plenty of experience in there, and they're going to need that.
The latter is definitely true. The experience, the three players that Scott mentioned have an average age that must be around 35, 36. So yeah, whether that's a good sign or a bad sign, that completely depends on how their fitness levels are at the moment. And I do see that Van Andriessen actually is injured at the moment already, which is not a good omen, I suppose, with a hernia. That does sound painful.
Get well anyway, soon, Kevin. Get well soon.
Yeah, a lot of experience. I think they will be indeed trying to stay in the league with that experience as well. They're the second most experienced, second oldest squad in the league. These three players do play a role in that, of course. There's actually quite a few youngsters as well, but these players are quite old. They have quite a few experienced central defenders as well, experienced goalkeeper at this level as well as with Sossé. You guys both still butchered it, of course, but now the pressure is on me, because of course I'm also not on the English. My mother tongue is also still not French, but Framboré, that should be more or less the pronunciation of it. It's definitely good to practice my French as well sometimes. They do have a lot of French names in their squad as well. Not necessarily French speakers, but French names. Speakers most likely, but not necessarily French or French-Belgian. But regardless of that, actually, they do have a lot of French players. Now I see it a bit closer on this screen. That she must be around 10 players, sir, that have the French nationality as well. Experienced squads. And this time, I think I can say, apart from the players we named already, a lot of unknown quantity here, especially at this level. Interesting to see how this will go.
Yeah, I can't really add too much to what you guys said. There's just a lot of old experienced heads, like with the central defensive partnership they could roll out of Benjamin Boulanger and Dimitri Mohamed. Both obviously have played in the Pro League as well. Van den Driessen as well. I think Van den Driessen is a good player. But his age may be catching up with him. Incomings, again, like kind of unknown quantities in that sense. A lot of players from second division, second teams or youth teams. So like Alessio Kirky, the Luxembourg Italian striker who came in from Mainz, second division second team. Matthew Healy joins from Ipswich Town's kind of under 21 squad. Tiano Diallo, also from Charleroi's youth squad. It'll be interesting to see kind of how the young players blend in with the kind of the older players there. Frode Galassi as well, probably kind of the weirder of all the transfers, and that he's 27, so he's kind of like in the prime of his career, but if you see how many clubs this man's played for since 2020, I think it's like 5 or 6 in the space of 3 years. So maybe he's hoping for a little bit of stability moving over from France. So yeah, interested to see kind of, obviously, like these kind of three teams will start as sort of favourites to be near the bottom end of that, of the league. But obviously it really does depend on what kind of the youth academy teams do in that sense. Let's go to the penultimate side for this Challenger Pro League preview. And that's another one of the promoted sides, which is Patro Eisden.
Yeah, Patro Eisden are new to this level as well, much like Franck Baran. They've got quite a small squad, actually. That's one of the things that I noticed when I was doing a little bit of researching them over the last few days. Not surprisingly, you know, not a lot of money to play with at that level. In terms of the bigger picture with Patro Eisden, their T1 is still Stein Steinen, old Club Bruges head. Club Bruges fans will know him quite well. He's been there since 2018, actually. So, you know, he's well bedded in at Patro, got them promoted. And has actually recently renewed his contract as well, so which is probably richly deserved, actually. You know, he's been a big factor in stabilising the club and bringing them up through divisions. They've got some interesting names actually in their squad. Few people worth highlighting: Svers, obviously the left back. They've brought him in, who's a very good addition for them. Tom Petermaat is still there. Used to be at Beerschot, of course. He's there because I think his daughter's at school in the area there, which is why he went to Patro originally. That was a surprising move when he made that about a year or so ago now. And another one worth mentioning, just for the pub quizzes, should it ever come up, Antwerp's T1, Mark Van Bommel, his son Thomas is at Patro now. Which means that Mark will be able to go and watch him regularly, I suspect, which was probably one of the reasons for suggesting that he could go and play regular football out of the limelight. One of Mark's sons obviously plays in the Eredivisie, and the other one is here at Patro. Patro, much like a number of clubs, difficult to know what to expect from them. The owners at the club have big expectations and relatively deep pockets, although they've not been emptying those pockets. Very ambitious owners who actually, I remember talking to an English football journalist a little bit over a year ago now, who got in contact with me because he's also an agent, this player, now that he's retired. And one of the players he represents was offered the opportunity to go to Patro Eisden. At this time, we were still in the First National. And the sales pitch that was given to him and his player was that they expect to be in the Challenger Pro League next season. Lo and behold, they've managed to do that. But they went even further and said that our plan is within 5 years to be in the Pro League. So the owners there have got bold expectations. But yeah, Patro Eisden, ambitious club. So it's going to be interesting to see what they can do this season.
Ah, the old 5-year plan never really works, does it? I think the Reading owner said he wanted to be in the Premier League in 5 years, and now we're playing in League One. So yeah, be careful what you state. I think, again, like a lot of unknown quantities within this squad, apart from the names you mentioned. But one name that really stood out is Stefan Inge Sigurdarson. So he comes over from Breidablik, Icelandic side, who people might have seen the other day scored 3 away to Copenhagen in the Champions League qualifier. So no bad side, but his goal scoring record this season is incredible, to say the least. 10 goals in 12 games in the Besta Deild, so that the main league in Iceland. A couple of goals in the cup as well, two goals in Champions League qualification as well. So I think he's got, if my maths is correct, about 15 goals in around about 20 odd games. So he's joined them as a striker for, I don't think there was, it's not really confirmed how much was spent on him, but that's definitely one to keep an eye on. 22-year-old Icelandic forward. If he can bring any of that kind of goal scoring form to them, he could be a really interesting kind of prospect, or one that people are starting to look at, and could ultimately kind of determine how their season goes if they have someone like him able to find a net consistently. it's just how you see that transition from the Icelandic league to the Challenger. But whether there's that much difference between two really just depend, because a lot of these sides like Breiðablik will be able to make kind of get into kind of playing some European football, maybe not making group stages, but you never know. Icelandic football is definitely something that's on the rise. So he's one then that really does kind of stand out from this team for me. But Joris, I'm sure you may have other opinions on this side.
They indeed are a bit of the five-year plans and so on. So far, we'll run for a part of that plan for sure. The one thing I just noticed is what's about the defender situation again. Four center defenders, which could be enough. That's not excessive, but not too shabby either. But also four right backs. So that's the main thing where it's like, that's a bit strange. So I'm sure there will be some movement there as well, since also like they're all in the an age where they should be playing between 21 and 31. So really, I'm wondering what that's about. The decent squad, the squad that have brought in some players as well, that really should be good enough for this level. And they also brought in Luke Nilis as a T2, I believe, or T3 in this coaching staff anyways. That's definitely an addition for strikers, I guess, anyway. And unknown quantity, but I have a feeling they should be staying in. But that's just a difficult to say at the moment, actually. But I would think so. I would give them definitely a chance to stay in, stay up. They really want to go for promotion. I don't think that still will be happening this season, or they should be really surprising me.
Yeah, that would certainly be a surprise if they went back to back. Let's finish off with the final side, RFC Liège. It's a welcome back to a side that are two times Belgian champion, one times Belgian Cup winner, and one Belgian League Cup winner when that tournament was a thing. So it's one for the football hipsters, isn't it, Scott? The return of RFC Liège. This is one that, like, a lot of people are like, they've got links to certain stories around Belgian football as well. So they're definitely one that I think a lot of people keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a fantastic intro you gave them there, Ben, because they are, what would be considered a tradition club, I think. This is another club that have done things, as Ben was saying. They have, of course, played in the top flight as well, dropped out of the Pro League in the sort of mid-late 90s, have now managed to work their way back up. And in truth, they've narrowly missed out on a couple of previous occasions over the last couple of years of being promoted back to this level. So it's good to see them back at a really good level in Belgian football. A historic club who have links with a number of other tradition clubs in Belgium for that very reason. Their fans get on quite well with Union Saint-Gilloise fans as well. There's a real... there's a bit of a link between these two clubs for those reasons. Their T1 at the moment is still Gaëtan Engelbert. He got them promoted last season. He is an RFC Liège favourite, former sporting director at the club, former academy director as well, someone who knows the club and the culture there, obviously inside out, and is probably the right man in terms of stability. We were talking about that earlier on and the importance of that in relation to Beveren. I think stability is really important when you come into this division as well. So going for stability there and Engelbert signing a new contract. Their transfer business has been quite quiet. They did a lot of business very early on when the window opened up. They brought in three or four players within the space of about 7 to 10 days. And I thought this is going to be really interesting, if they can keep up this rate. But I think they've brought in something like six and five have gone out. I think, in terms of expectations from them, I think if they can stay in the division, they will see that as a success this season. I think they probably have enough to stay in it just. I think they have a little bit more than some sides. Historically as well, of course, just a point of note, they are the club famously at the centre of the Bosman affair. We don't need to go into all the details and implications for that for football, the story there. But Jean-Marc Bosman, of course, was at RFC Liège and at the centre of that case. So they do have a famous link to an infamous moment, if you like, in footballing history, of course. But yeah, it's always great to welcome a great tradition club back to this level. And again, much like the, our other newcomers, I'm looking forward to being able to have a kind of closer look at them reasonably regularly this season.
Yep, definitely. Also, a thing to say, maybe for all promoted sides from the third tier, they're all actually quite traditional clubs. This one maybe the most of all. Yeah, but I can't actually say that I know a lot of the players here. I will try to my best and run through the ones I do know. I'm sorry to take the wind there from you, probably, Ben, but the Devati in goal, yeah, should be okay for this level if he's still at the same level as he used to be, which was actually not good enough for the first division, but well, for this level, it should be okay. I believe also Le Joli, it tells me something. Then Reno Wilmots is, of course, the son of Mark Wilmots, to also bring back another link of the past. Benjamin Labo has a rich history in the second tier in Belgian football, mainly. And that's already almost about it. Adriano Bertaccini used to be a really big talent at Genk. He has an interesting career. He has spells in Austria and in lower leagues, and now seems like he's coming back to the second tier. So that's interesting to see how he will be doing at this level. He's still only 22 or 23, so yeah, he will turn 23 in a few days. So maybe by the time you're listening, that might have changed. We'll have to see in the division below. So in the third tier, he scored 41 in around 80 games, so 1 in 2 average, one goal every 142 minutes to be precise. So if he can maintain any of that in this division, then that would be a big plus for them to maybe stay up in the league. But yeah, I can't really predict anything based on the limited amount of players I know about them. I will be very interested in finding out more of them throughout the season.
Yeah, definitely. There's not too many that I've kind of heard of either. I guess, yeah, a couple kind of noteworthy ones for me, like Jonathan D'Ostilio, been there since 2016, since he left Open. So he's been there for a very, very long time. So he's kind of like one of the old experience heads. Jesse Mputu, he could be quite an interesting one. Scored 13 goals in 34 games for them last season on the way to promotion. Started his career, I believe, at KSV Ruzelaar, who obviously then went bust. So he started in the Challenger and he's kind of worked his way back up, going from like a couple of the other kind of lower divisions of Belgian football until he's made his way back into the Challenger at the age of 28. So it's kind of nice to see someone's career that's kind of come back on track like that. So be interested to see if his kind of goal scoring in the third tier will translate into the second tier as well. But yeah, like you said, because these three are all kind of those traditional clubs, it's sides that you're really interested to watch as well. To kind of, it's always nice. Obviously, it is nice to see some of the newer names and the newer clubs coming through and like experience new things. So it's always nice when a club's gone away and then come back, and it's like, oh yeah, that you get all those kind of that nostalgia feeling of these teams coming back. So definitely looking forward to watching all of those. And that is it. We have done every single side in the Challenger Pro League apart from obviously the youth teams, but as per usual this season, we'll kind of run it the same format where we will talk about what's been happening. Scott, obviously, as our kind of resident Challenger watcher, will give us an update on everything that's been happening, including with the youth sides as well. So don't worry, if you are interested in those teams, we will talk about them during the season. But there's just not much point doing a preview on these sides when there's so much flux there in terms of who's going to be in those squads and stuff, and it can change quite rapidly. Guys, before we finish this one off, is there anything else you want to add on the Challenger for this season?
Well, it was nice to get the news today. I think it was confirmed, wasn't it, guys, that issue around broadcasting with the under 23 teams has been finally resolved. So it did look like up until today that some teams looked like, you know, they were not going to be seeing any live coverage from initially for the first few weeks, but it was confirmed today that that has been rectified. So all games will be available live, should you be lucky enough to be able to view them. But that was very encouraging because it did look like some clubs were in a position where they were hoping to be able to broadcast some of their games on their own YouTube channels, but we had a farcical situation where they didn't have the permission of 11 Sports and the Pro League. But an agreement has been reached now for everything to be broadcast live. So happy days on that front.
Yep, glad that is sorted out. And looking forward to this season. I'll try to catch a bit more. I do believe the league got more interesting with this format. So definitely we'll be watching once in a while to watch some games, which is already more than I used to do.
No, definitely. I think it should be an exciting one, especially come that kind of battle for that top six, especially then in the playoffs as well. We'll definitely be keeping an eye to see which side's going to look to take on one of the Pro League sides. But as per usual, hopefully you enjoyed our little preview of the Challenger Pro League. If you have any questions on any of the teams and the league, please do let us know. We're more than happy to reach out and talk to you. If you want any advice on where to go to watch a game in the Challenger and what stadiums and stuff to visit as well, yeah, we're happy to point you in the right direction and to the right people. Yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for our second and final pre-season preview. Scott and yours, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure, and I particularly love these episodes because we can just we can indulge ourselves a little bit when we do our pre-season previews, and my appetite is well and truly whetted the new CPL season now, so bring it on, let's do it.
Yep, I'm sorry for the play. Yes, okay, it's been long enough for me, clearly. But I feel sorry for the fans of teams in even lower leagues. But no, I'm sorry, this definitely has been enough, as you can see here.
Definitely. As always, if you like what we do, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And yeah, you've had two this week, but we'll be back with just one next week. And we hope to speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.